Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Premier View Tipperary GAA podcast has just got its very first sponsor. The podcast is now proudly sponsored by MerchMonster.ie. On MerchMonster.ie, you can buy personalised hoodies, t-shirts, polo shirts, personalised snood face coverings, and a whole lot more. They've even got a product personaliser over on their website. Go over there and check it out now. They deal in one-off orders and also in bulk orders, class hoodies, team and work polo shirts, and everything else in between. Go over there and check them out now. It's merchmonster.ie. Now let's get back to this week's show.
Hello and welcome to the Premier View Tipperary GAA podcast. I'm joined today by a man who needs no introduction. He has played minor football for Tip, dual under 21, senior football, intermediate hurling, and has honours at Division 3 Football League twice, Division 4 Football League, an under 21 hurling medal, and just recently a Munster senior football medal. He is Borussia Kane's Philip Austin. You're very welcome, Philip.
Thanks very much for having me on.
So, Philip, I didn't say in my introduction recently retired, but you've decided to hang up the boots after many years of good service and one training session, I suppose, this year. But was this something you'd been considering for a while? And was the Manor of the Munster win last year a prompt for you to maybe finish up on a good note in terms of the history of winning the provincial title and the centenary of Bloody Sunday?
I suppose it's not what people think that there was a Bronco coming up on Wednesday, and I didn't fancy it. It had been in the back of my head. Maybe it was something that I should have done. Maybe back in December or January. It's just that the kind of one week followed another, and next minute I realised that we were back in the field, and I rang Davey and I said, "Look, this is what I'm thinking," and he said, "Look, come on over." Davey being Davey, an hour and a half later after I arrived over, I was walking back off the field after fully taking part in all the training sessions. Yeah. So, it had been something in my head. And then wise to that, once bitten kind of thing, I rang him on Tuesday and I said, so no one full well trained was Wednesday. And I rang him and I told him no. So, listen, we had a good discussion there for 20, 25 minutes. Davey's a great fella. Massive time for him. And of course, we wouldn't have, got to where we got to last year without him, and he's a great team in around him as well. And it was great to get to, I suppose, to play under him for the year and see what the story would be.
Yeah. So we had Samantha Lambert on there last week, and she when they were beaten last year, she said she cried the whole way home in the car. She knew she was done. She announced her retirement in January, then whatever, two or three months later. And but it's only hitting her now, we say, when everyone is going back training. Did you feel, even though you went back for the first session, are you feeling a bit left out, a bit, Joe, maybe I should be going training kind of thing now, or?
Yeah, not really, to be honest. I suppose, I think when you know, because the sun was shining on Wednesday, even on Monday, the sun was shining, and there was no feeling in me that there was a similar feeling I might get for pre-season in November when I see the lights above Dr. Morris Park when I just arrive over and I realise I have to run around the pitch for an hour and a half. I was almost getting that feeling, yet the sun was shining, so the ground was hard, and I wasn't getting that feeling where I can't wait to get home from work, pack up the bag and get going. Because obviously, time-wise, you're getting home from work 5:30, then you leave again, you're getting over for training 6:30, for training 7:30, and then you don't get home until maybe 11 o'clock or that. Obviously, the time commitments are huge, and it just wasn't that feeling that, God, I can do this again. And I know pre-season was a little bit different this year, all right, but and maybe it's something that will hit me in a few weeks, but at the moment, no, I'm not feeling left out. Up in 2 weeks' time, 10th of May, or whenever the government had said, because I know there's, whilst there may have been a couple of years left with Tip inter-county, like, where the body was anyway, I can now give, you know, any extra month I gave there, I was losing it down the back end of maybe time at the club, like, which I would like to give back as well. So yeah, not at the moment, Mike. No.
So look, just going back to November there, as a group of players, the win must have been very special, especially for the likes of yourself, Brian Fox, Connor Sweeney. You'd soldiered so long. I think he went for, well, you certainly went from 06 to 14, I think, without winning a Munster Championship match. I didn't realise that as a fair stat. But the stars just seemed to align for you. I mean, Liam Casey and Michael Quinlan didn't get to go travelling, so they were available. Colin O'Riordan was available. Is it something you believe was genuinely achievable, winning the Munster during all those lean years?
Yeah, I think if you go back to past players and people ask like why you stayed playing even though the years were barren and maybe training numbers were poor, like, and I just felt it was a thing that you were just giving something back, or maybe just trying to carry the torch along for as long as you could until maybe the players were there. And I mean you had serious players all up along. I mean, if you look when I started off, the likes of, you know, Paul Fitzgerald, and who ended up playing a good few years of Paul, Eamon Hanron, the likes of Paddy Flash, Shane Stapleton and Decky. Do you know, great players, and they were kind of doing the same thing I was doing. They were carrying it along as far as they could and they passed it off. Kevin Mulryan was another one. And they didn't get the Munster they were looking for. They were very close with the Niall Kelly's pint in 01, where a lot of them were still around then. And you know, they carried another a good few years after that. And I suppose, did I think we were going to win it? I wouldn't have stayed playing, I think, if I didn't think we were going to win it. I don't think any sports person goes in just to take part. They really, really believe they're going to win. And as you say, it's a little bit like Liverpool in 05. Like, sometimes it's just destined to be. Like, and it just happened. The stars, as you say, aligned. And we won it. I think Reardon was coming back a huge shot. Like, even for him to be in around, he was in around. I don't know if people know, but he was in around for the two, yeah. The Limerick game, the Clare game, he was in around, but it was just great. It was some boost. Like, you could see the young fellas' eyes light up when they saw him walking in. They were almost kind of, I suppose, rubbing their eyes. They couldn't believe when they saw him. And I suppose, I don't know if Conlon even realised the impact that he would have had with all those players. Like, and I got to play a year with Conlon. I suppose he was very young at the time. He was only 18 or that. But, and I always hope I would be playing long enough for him to maybe come back and play, but I didn't realise the way it was going to go. Like, and big shot again, Casey and Mikey was travelling. Casey was due to go travelling, and yeah, look, I suppose another team's got players back as well. Maybe just suited that we got such big players back, and it made it all the more possible. And I think with every player that you got back, people probably believed it a little bit more. And you know, if you have every single player believing that you're going to achieve a Munster title, there's no reason why you can't.
Yeah. We'll probably cut out the bit you said about Liverpool in 05.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm a Chelsea supporter. There's not too many around either.
It must be good to look back on, and maybe it's not something you'll do now, but in future, that your last or nearly last contribution in the jersey was, I suppose, the winning point or the point that secured that famous win in November. It's something you look back on with a lot of fondness in time to come, I presume.
Yeah, well, I did play a few minutes against Mayo there as well, but which I forget about that game. I will look back, on it. I think you kind of mentioned it earlier, I suppose, when things are lined up and maybe it's better to be more lucky. I mean, I was just in the right place at the right time, and I mean, it was simple enough in the end, but it is nice to look. I probably will in time to come properly reflect and look back on it with great fondness. But it was a surreal moment at the end, because I played an awful lot of games and I wouldn't actually be on the pitch at the end, because I end up coming off at 55, 60 minutes, and to be on the pitch for one of the biggest games of your life at the end with no supporters was a very surreal moment, but nice, because you got to see it with, you know, the likes, as you mentioned earlier, like Foxy, like that's someone that had soldiered with for a long, long time. And Sweeney has been there for 10 years, and a lot of the players that have been there, even Mikey, that he's a young man, has been there 7-8 years as well. So, and it is just nice to spend it with the players. And even that, even like, you know, there was no big night or anything, that was just spending time with lads you've played with all up along, like young and old.
So let me take you back there to 06 now, Philip. And you had played minor in 04. You were a dual under 21 in 06. And then Seamus McCarthy comes along and gives you your debut for the senior team versus Kerry at 19. That was a huge vote of confidence from McCarthy. How did you feel about having to mark Tomás O'Shea on your debut? Or does a 19-year-old even think about that sort of thing?
I remember the game down in Fitzgerald Stadium, but... look, it was just, I never felt as if I was in the wrong place in terms of, like, should I be there or not? Like, I always felt at home on a GA field, and especially playing football. And it didn't really matter who or who I wasn't on. Like, it was just someone else. And I would quietly be confident in all my own ability. Like, so, but it was, again, nice, as my father would have said, like, nice to rub shoulders as well with some of the top players in the game. Like, again, I look back at in fondness, but it wouldn't have been something at the time I would be thinking, God, I can't wait to get this last jersey now. It wouldn't have been something I would ever have done. Like, most of my tip jerseys, I maybe have two or three jerseys from other counties. I've never really changed or swapped jerseys, because it was never something that I kind of liked doing, because, you know, you're wearing the blue and gold Tipperary. It's a very, very proud thing to do. Like,
yeah, absolutely. So that same year, you played 21 football, as I said, and you were also on the 21 hurling team. You won a Munster under 21 medal that year. How did you manage the workload that year? Can you remember? Was it tough going?
Yeah, it was difficult, because I was actually working in Dublin at the time, and it was quite difficult. It is a very, very difficult thing to do. Work both grades, and I think it's actually become more difficult. But I think modern day managers are pretty good at working together with each other and actually monitoring your workload. And there's loads of different apps and things now that you can, and there's a lot of I suppose cross chat between different setups, that if they have the best, I suppose, the best interest of the player at heart, they'll know that this is their player, this is their what they're investing in, and they're going to, obviously, you know, this is where they're getting the results from, so they need to look after their player. Like,
yeah. So that 21 team was a very, very good team, but you were unfortunate to come up against a star-studded Kilkenny team that would backbone their senior team for the following decade. You came on early in the replay, scored 2 points. But is it one game that you look back on with a little bit of regret?
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because it is a game now that got away from us. I think we could have lost it up in Croke Park, really, though, because we drew it in Croke Park, but we were in a winning position, and we sat back and just invited Kenny on, and that is not something you want to do. And I think the game was, to be honest, lost in Croke Park that day. But I remember myself and Danny O'Hanlon came on. I think we came on at the same time. And he got 2 points. I got 2 points. And I don't know, we lost by 1 or 2 points at the end. But it was one of the most gutting feelings ever after that game. Because I played into a bit of intermediate County Hurling, but I never, you know, that was my last intercounty Hurling game as such, because I broke this home the following year and I didn't get to play my last year under 21 and we lost to Cork in the first round. It was a tough defeat. Like, and you're young too, like playing in such a, you know, you have a big game, you're 19 years of age, you're in Ireland final, it's a big game to you, like, big game. Yeah.
Absolutely. So after that, you essentially went full throttle with football, and when you were out at 21 with a few odd years of intermediate hurling in 10 and 11, were you always gearing towards playing football, or were you, like a lot of North Tip lads, a view on trying to make the senior hurling team?
It was, realistically, I suppose, it was after that year, I think it was 7 or 8 called in after that 21 All-Ireland final, and I wasn't one that was called in. And then when I didn't get a chance to play 21 the following year, the kind of writing's on the wall, because you haven't been seen in a year as such. So it was always going to be difficult. And I suppose I was relatively late to hurling as well. I didn't pick it up until I was 12 or 13. So skill was something that was kind of maybe lacking in probably both a little bit of hurling and football. But like, my first port of call would have always been hurling, coming from a hurling club. But I was probably better at football.
Yeah.
And I was treated very welcomed into a football panel, and looked after well. Like, in the club, we're always very, very good in that regard as well. Like, never, you know, I'd be coming back after playing football, and you know, they wouldn't be too hard on me either. Like, they would have been very, very good. Like,
So as I said, you played Jewel 21 in 06. You played, as I said, intermediate hurling, senior football for 2 years running. Where do you come down on the whole Jewel player question at underage today? Is it unrealistic for lads at minor to succeed at both now, with the way the games fall, I suppose, in your opinion?
Yeah, well, it doesn't make any sense not to bring players along and play both, because they can complement each other, to be honest. And you could argue a point, I know people some people are going to disagree with me, but that's, was it 2 years ago they got to the minor and they lost both the minor football and minor hurling on Ireland?
15.
Okay. So it was a bit more time flying. Yeah, you could argue that maybe they wouldn't have got there if they hadn't have had, you know, if the footballers hadn't the hurlers, the hurlers hadn't the footballers, maybe they would have got to neither. So it was a massive achievement. It's just, again, it's something that can be, it can be worked, but possibly after minor, I don't think it can work.
Yeah.
But you have to, like, if you start discarding players from your, we say, for argument's sake, from your hurling team, that because they're playing football, and then they decide they don't make the hurling team, then, and yet they're pretty good footballers, but they haven't been in the football bracket, then, they haven't been in the football community, like, for the last while. Well, then they're kind of they're catching up in skills that they may have been able to do as they went along. So I just don't think you should be discarding players, I suppose, as quickly as we do in the county, because I just do think they can complement each other.
Yeah. So in 11, you played senior football on the 22nd of May. You played intermediate hurling on the 30th of May. And then you had the qualifiers then a couple of weeks later. George Hennigan and Brian Fox also played hurling that year. Did you train, or was it just a turn up on the day job? Like, was it very hard to actually manage that workload?
Yeah, it was difficult, to be honest. We mostly played the football, and then we would train maybe once a week with the intermediate hurling. And look, if I'm very, very honest, I look back now and I'd say just it wasn't feasible. And I think it wasn't really fair either, maybe on some of the intermediate hurlers there who were potentially taking their position, that had been training with the hurlers all year. And it's something that I possibly do regret, that, like, you should really realistically at that stage just be one or the other. And because obviously you've lads that are playing intermediate hurling there, it means the world to them. And that means any less to me. It's just that, like, they had been committing to the team all along, and we were coming in and out, and I just don't think that's fair either. But the workload was managed. Just we would go down and we would play maybe the first half of a challenge game they were playing, and then they were pretty good. The intermediate manager then kind of to rest us and things like that.
Yeah. when John Evans arrived on the scene, no disrespect, I suppose, to any manager going before it, but was that a culture shock for the panel? Was there different level of training, of professionalism brought to the scene?
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good question. Because James McHarrity gave him my start, and then John Owen was like, they were my first two managers, and anyone I've ever worked with, I've gone on really, really well. And again, they were great tip men as well. And I think, as you said, no disrespect to them, but maybe when John Evans came in, people saw him as this guy that was coming in from Kerry, the kingpins of football, and maybe the whole thing is going to kick off then. And I think because he had been with the Abbey as well, a lot of the footballers knew him from down there as well. And he seemed to be able to get players in. And because there was some form of a kind of like an aura about him, he just seemed to be able to get a lot more players in. And that had been something we struggled with for a few years. But since before I started, but when I started, we were really, really struggling with numbers. Something that was always a problem because you couldn't have games and you were always struggling to have even small modified games and stuff. And when he came along, then you were getting you were getting 30 in, and this was seen as remarkable stuff. And that the bar was kind of maybe low at times in training wise, like, and he was able to get players in. And I just think it was because he was coming from a Kerry background and was an outside manager. And again, it shouldn't have been the way. I mean, you had James McCarthy, you know, John Owens in there, and they were, you know, top tip men with good, I suppose, you know, they had good management teams with them as well. Like, and again, local tip guys, and we just couldn't get the numbers in. And through no fault of their own, it was just that tip football wasn't maybe seen in that regard. And yes, you had some quality players there. I kind of mentioned it out at the start that were carrying the torch all along as well.
Yeah. Peter Creedon then came on the scene, and he'd be a completely different personality type to Evans. Does it take time to adjust to a new management style?
It's something that can be done relatively quickly, I would say. Especially the fact that I had worked with Peter as a minor, and he'd worked with other players, you know, around that age bracket as well. So when he came in, he would have known a lot of that. He would have known all the players nearly firsthand. So he would have worked with them, and again, everyone would hold Peter in very high esteem. And I suppose he's an honorary Tipperary man. I suppose
he is now.
And he's worked with very, very good teams up along, and he does. He's a much more quiet demeanor than John had. But he held massive respect amongst the players and management and the management team that he was quietly spoken, but got his point across very, very well. And he has a very, very good football brain as well. He would think about the game a lot, so I would say relatively quickly.
Yeah. How special was the goal against Kerry in 2010? Did it make it even better that it was live on TV?
I'll be honest, it's not something I've ever actually really thought about too much, to be perfectly honest. We lost the game. I contributed to the scoreboard, but effectively we lost the game. It didn't really make a difference. Like, if we had won the game, maybe a different scenario, but it was fine. It was fine. I look back on it in a few years.
As we referenced earlier, despite a Division 3 league in 2009, the championship was a graveyard for Tip, with the odd qualifier win dotted in those years. But then I suppose we had the 2010 under-21 Munster success. The following year, you had Munster and All-Ireland minor success. Did that give a boost to you guys that were on the panel? Did it motivate you to keep going and knowing that this group of players were coming on and were going to really add to the team?
After the 21 final, was it?
After both. After 10 and 11, where you had the 21 Munster win, and then you had the two the minor Munster and All-Ireland in 11. Must have been a great boost to the panel.
Yeah, well, I suppose the 21s, the likes of Conor Sweeney and Sean Carey and Peter Atchison had been in with us already training with us. Like, so their cards were marked already. They kind of were, you know, known as good footballers, and they were in with us. So we kind of, it was easy enough to know as they were coming along that these were good footballers. And, you know, Kieran McDonald as well was captain of the team, and Kieran McDonald was one of the most impressive players I've ever come across. Like, and just anytime he spoke, like, the room was just unbelievably silent. Like, you could hear a pin drop. And when we knew those type of players were coming behind us, there was, I'm sure, I know Cracker would have been delighted. Like, you know, he would have been delighted with this kind of stuff going on. You know, yeah. Obviously, if you've been there so long, like, he gave a huge commitment as well. And when you're there that long and you see this kind of this surge of footballers, it's hard not to get excited about it. And he was probably what I was like in the last few years, fiercely excited by what I saw coming up along and improving. Like, and I witnessed all those young fellas, you know, coming up along and improving so much. And to see the likes of, you know, Sweeney get his All-Star and Ashton get his nomination and Bill Maher and Robbie and Kylie and all them, like, and, you know, just you've seen them evolve into, like, you know, forces in the football field, which is, it's mighty, really.
Yeah. So the results undoubtedly started to pick up, I suppose, from 14 onwards with the influx of those minors and as you said, the 21s were maturing. It must have given a great belief to everyone in the camp at that time that the hard work was really beginning to bear fruit.
Yeah, and I suppose I'd like to think, in fairness, most management teams kind of were adding a little bit as they went along, and the exposure was starting to rise and gain a little bit of traction. And the likes of Paul and Muller and Hannah and Decky and Paddy Flan and all them and Shane Staple, they won the Tommy Murphy in 2004. And it was something that didn't seem to, nothing really kicked on from it after. And it was like we were rebuilding again. And I think Evans coming in seemed to increase the exposure of it. Yet a lot of players had done an awful lot, a lot of management had done an awful lot of work beforehand and unbeknownst to everyone else. And at this stage, the development squad started with this kind of, went in tandem with, like, the development squads being set up in at 14, 15 and 16, which made a huge difference as a knock-on then, which then I think we probably started to see then a few years after that, a few short years after that, which just goes to show you, like, on the back of, we'll say, Lowry's announcement yesterday, you know, you can't not be excited if a name comes in. And I suppose at that time, maybe Evans was the name we were all on our list, like. Then Peter came in, of course, added his own bit to it again. And then Liam came in, and Liam would have had a good background with Limerick as well. And we seem to be attracting bigger names, the longer that we were, I suppose, the further it went on and the closer, the longer the time was going on, we seemed to be attracting bigger names and getting a little bit more exposure. And the results kind of were still up and down, and they were mixed. There didn't seem to be. We got a few victories in. I would say we were quite pretty progressive in our league, so we won Division 4 and 2 Division 3s. But still, at that stage, we couldn't break our championship duck. Like, we were still very poor in the championship, and at that stage, we were getting on average, I'd say, if even a game or two games, a year, like.
Yeah. As you mentioned there, Liam Cairns came on board for 2016, and the start of the year looked like it could be a bit of a disaster, but then it took on a life of its own. Can you remember? Can you talk me through the highlights of the year? I mean, beating Cork for the first time since 1944. You had a Munster final against Kerry. You went to Breffni Park to play Derry. You had Galway, that Galway game in the quarterfinals, and then those unbelievable scenes between the supporters and players in the Hogan Stand after that semi-final to Mayo.
Yeah, it's funny that now, because I'd almost have to go back even a couple of months just before that. We finished up the league above in Sligo, and we were nearly relegated down to Division 4. Only we picked up a point up there. And I'd say that possibly was the lowest point. I'd say that was the lowest point probably of my playing career with Tiplac in football. Because I remember we were driving back up in the car, myself, Bill Maher, Mikey and Alan Campbell. I just thought, well, this is, what are we at here? Like, you know, we're floundering around coming sixth in Division 3, and what business do we have trying to compete against Cork and Kerry, who are Division 1 teams, and we can't even We can't even get out of Division 3. What are we at? And again, we played Watford that year with the first game. George Hannigan snipped over 2 points or 3, 2 points on his left foot, which is unheard of. And sometimes things are just kind of written in the cards, really, I think, after that.
Yeah.
Sitting down, training hadn't started and we were kind of very relaxed, just sitting down the week of the Cork game. And Kieran McDonald says, we need to get these guys going or something. And I was like, just settle now, because you'd be putting sometimes if you say there's a problem, there might be a problem, but if you say there's a problem, then there is a problem.
Yes.
So we didn't really say too much, and we just got on it, and then we got into a circle down just before we traveled to the stadium against Cork, and I remember Liam Kearns kind of said to us, he said, look, what does, if you finish up playing football next year, I think he said to George Hanning, he said, if you finish up playing football this year or next year, like, are you going to be happy with that, or how will you feel about it? And George turned around and said, I'll feel as if I'm after failing, like if we don't beat Cork at all and during my career, like, and kind of kicked on from there. Went out and there were some amazing performances. There were some amazing performances around the field that day, and I don't think we ever looked as if we were ever going to get beaten that day. And sometimes it's just the way it is. Mm. And then I suppose if you rock on then and you go on 3 weeks later, I remember Mikey Quinney was sick for the, wasn't great for the game. And kind of, sometimes when you get a boost, we say Reardon coming in this year in 2021 for the football, give us a big kick on going to play our games. And then something like that, when you're a talisman, like, wasn't feeling great for the game and kind of, it's a bit of a kick in the stomach. And we just didn't perform against Kerry. And I just felt we maybe put too much pressure on actually trying to win a Munster as opposed to actually beat Kerry. And mm-hmm. we're thinking of the finished product as opposed to maybe the process of getting through the game. And we just couldn't break them down and they were too strong for us. And it was just a level too far. And I think probably as Decky Brown actually said, it was probably going to be the biggest game of Tip Football's. I don't know what he actually said, but he said the big game for them wasn't the Munster final, it was the actual game against Derry. And it's only now, I suppose, he looked back, yeah. He was probably right, and he's so experienced, like, and I suppose he's in with Tip now, and that'll be a big boost down for them, the experience he's bringing. But he said at the time, yeah, he was like, this is the big game, not the Derry game. And again, it looked as if it was getting away from us, and I think that was the game really that defined maybe our year in that, because we just got over the line. Sweeney kicked 2 worldies of points at the end of the game. Again, there was massive performances all over the field. Just got over the line. But what that game did for us then, it allowed all those players, the likes of Peter Atchison and Bill Maher and Robbie Kiley and Sweeney and Foxy, all of them and Comfort, to get the exposure at the highest level to show how good they were. Mm-hmm. And again, beating Galway then kind of at nearly almost their ease. And sometimes when you're playing that well, you don't actually know how you're playing well or why you're playing well or why you're winning even. It just seems, things seem to click. And it's the same way if you're playing poorly. Sometimes it's very, very hard to put your finger on why you're playing poorly. And that's the beauty of sport, I suppose. And again, the Mayo game, possibly a game that got away from us. I felt that was maybe one that got away from us over the years. So maybe a la the Kilkenny 21 game back in 6 or 7.
Yeah, just looking at that Mayo game, how did the early black card for Robbie Kiley, did that really change the course of the game for us?
In a defensive and attacking way, yeah, absolutely. I think it was one of the harshest blacks I've ever, still to this day, I think it's the best I've ever seen. I mean, just, yeah, and my, your heart will go out to him as well, because it was, you know, he has Tip Football at heart as well. And it was a tough one because you had to rejig, you had to bring on a sub, and you lose his direct line. He's not a weaving type player. He's a direct runner, kind of rugby-esque, like breaking a line. Like, that was always his game. And you're losing that element from your attack, which is going to be huge. And then also, it takes time to reshuffle. And we've always been a team that, like, we could potentially, if we concede a goal, we could potentially concede 3 points along with it, or 4 points. And I think we went from maybe being 2 points up to going in 5 points down or something like that very, very quickly in the blink of an eye. And I think that is the unforgiving nature of top level sport, which we learned the hard way in the Northern Ireland semi-final. But undoubtedly, it was a game that got away from us. And we brought it back to 3 points. And then I think it was like Kieran O'Connor, or no, I think it was Bert Dermott, was kicking in the ball, slipped, kicking in the ball, and it was this, ended up being this most beautiful pass into, I don't know, whoever was in the full forward line, and just managed to cut through like in a soccer game, a diagonal ball in, and it was finished to the net. But again, that's sport. You need a bit of luck on your side. Maybe we got our luck this year and we didn't get it then, or maybe we had rode our luck at that stage and it was Mayo's turn. But yeah, so that was probably that was the year. But it was amazing, really. The year just kicked off. And again, I can't really explain to you why it kicked off. It was just, it's one of those things. And I would just put it down to, it's just sport.
Yeah. So look, we'll step away from the inter-county game for the moment. So football in North Tip has really been neglected, I would say, with only a handful of clubs really paying it any heed. So it must have been very satisfying for you to win a county medal with Tomás McDonagh's in 2011, beating some very established clubs, Commercials, Mile Rovers, on the way. Was it as special as it would have been with your own club mates, or was it diluted slightly from the divisional effort?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you compare to... we won the Intermediate County Final in 10, hurling. So I don't think you can compare it to that, because it's what I mean, whereas you've been playing, like we've played the club all along. It was massively special because we had become almost like a club team where we had amalgamation of a few clubs. Now, I know that there was a number of clubs there, but we only pulled from three or four clubs realistically, traditionally hurling clubs. And it was unbelievably special. And we had a mighty evening after the game, and it did feel like it was, we were actual club team, because we did get to know each other very well, and we would have known each other, you know, from the North Tip circuit. Like, so it's not as if we weren't known. And you had the likes of a lot of good footballers that had gone through that actually had been in playing with Tip at some stage as well. Yeah. And it meant so much to them as well. And it was nice beating Mile Rovers and Commercials on the way, because we would have known all those players that I would have played with a lot of them. And we did it playing not pretty football. I think the final was 9-7 or something like that. It was something pretty deplorable, but listen, does it really matter when you win it? But
exactly.
It was great, and it was massive because it was so much work from Joe Hannigan that went in as well. And it was great for him because I was delighted for him because he had put in such a stint trying to progress football in the North and in Tip. And a lot of his work, I feel, sometimes goes unheralded as well, because he's mighty, and he brings great exposure to it as well. Now, his warm-ups might be wonderful, but he better stick to the official stuff.
Look, and that led me straight into my next question. Was Big Joe was instrumental in getting that team together. How big an influence did he have on football? I suppose he was a huge influence, obviously, on that team, but how big an influence in Tip overall is he? I mean, he was a county football board chairman and very outspoken when he was there, as only Joe can be. He's a big personality, and he was very influential, isn't he?
Yeah, look, I suppose I'll answer tentatively, because there's so much good work goes on that the Tip football would not manage without the supporters club. And I know Big Joe was integral in that, and I'm reluctant to name names as well, because I'd be afraid to leave someone out that has put in massive work in the background that, to be honest, I don't think we're fully aware of. I know we're not fully aware of the work that goes on in the background. And I mean, they're down selling tickets, like, which must be sometime in the, they're down selling tickets for €20 a pop when we were in the depths of despair. Like, we weren't helping them out at all when we were playing poorly on the pitch and floundering down Division 4 and Division 3. We can't be helping the thing out. And they were still driving the thing on as best they could, and they never put any pressure on us to do anything that, you know, we didn't. They were just allowing us to play the football that we wanted to play, and they were quietly going about their business. And to this day, like, they still do massive, massive work. And you know, without them, would any of the success be possible? Possibly not, you know. And I think they put in massive work, and Joe has been integral in that as well. But there's a lot of other guys there as well that are part of that.
Yeah. Would you like to see that North Tip selection back together to try and compete at senior level in Tip? Do you think the clubs of the North Tip division need to up their game and promote football more? I suppose not only just the North clubs, but all over the county. Uh, do the clubs need to promote football better within their own ranks?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I mean, I suppose it's a case maybe that just every club seems to be in North Tip fully focused on hurling, and that's their number one love, and it's very hard to force football down the throat of people that don't want or maybe don't have the interest in it. Could there be a breakaway? There probably could be. Like, you maybe down the line you could look at something. The fact that the split season's coming in probably gives it a better chance in that you're not trying to get players like the Kildangan players. We often had trouble getting very talented players because they would have been always seen being in the latter stages of the senior championship in quarterfinals, semifinals. So then we went from a case of, you know, if we just say we had a panel of 20 and four or five of them were involved, then we have to go dig them out somewhere else. And same way we used to get a few players from Killawan, Buggy and Bill O'Mara and Ray Malotny and the like. And again, if they were going pretty well, then we wouldn't have them. So it was an ever-changing kind of a fluid setup that we possibly could have gone through, 30, 35 players just to get games. And in the end, I think we were taking fines for not turning up. And you're not really giving it a good stab. You're just doing it for the sake of it. And I think if you were to do it, I think it needs to be done properly. And I don't have the answer for it, to be honest. I can't put my finger on what will help. I know development of development squads and stuff may help, but I think it's probably a revolution in the clubs, a club thing that needs to be done. But again, I can't put my finger on what would need to be done.
Yeah. So just you're a teacher by trade, I suppose. So some people think that children today don't get enough exercise. As a PE teacher, would you agree? And if so, would you like to see more time devoted to PE in schools?
Yeah, well, I think there should be full-time PE teachers in primary schools, to be perfectly honest. You're asking, primary school teachers are, I wouldn't be able to be a primary school teacher. They have the most unbelievable patience, and they have an array of the multitude of different skills. They can turn from English to Irish to maths in the flip of a coin, and it's unbelievable. And to ask them as well to take on something so big as well, when their hands are already full and they're trying to meet curriculum of six or seven or eight or nine or 10 different subjects, and then you're asking them to look after the physical well-being of kids is absolutely, it's humongous. And it's just not possible. There's not enough hours in the day. The kids are only in school from, say, half nine to 3 o'clock. There just aren't enough hours in the day to get that much. And they're supposed to be getting 60 minutes physical activity a day, unless they're getting it at home. There's no possible way they can get it in school because there's too much curriculum to actually to cover. And it's no, like, the PE or the primary school teachers, they're in a difficult position because they're the ones getting the blame, and it's 100% not their fault. Yeah. I just think the whole system is flawed. And I think the only way I know in other countries, they have specially designed systems where they have a PE teacher in and takes the kids for PE. And that really is the progressive way and the best way to go forward, if all being told.
Yeah, very good. So what's next for Philip Austin in his sporting life? I know you were telling Inda before we came on that you were trying to turn pro at golf, but if that doesn't work out for you, is the plan to stay playing away with your club? Have you any ambitions to keep involved as a coach or a manager down the line?
Sport-wise, anyway, I'm trying to get down. I'm at around 20, so I give myself the target of getting down to maybe 19 by the end of the summer.
Lofty ambitions.
I'm a lefty, yeah, very ambitious. I'm a lefty golfer. If it's a very, very sunny day, I won't get much of a tan because I spend a lot of my time in trees. I won't be on any of those teams anytime soon. But it's a target I kind of have set that I'm going to try and prove. And because I always said I'd like to play golf when I finish up. I just think it's a nice pastime. It could be a nice sport if you really, really, really wanted to get into it. But if I just wanted to tip out on a Saturday morning with a few of the guys, it's around for 4 hours and you get to hang around with the lads.
Yeah.
I think it's nice. And a lot of the footballers do play. The footballers play a bit of golf, so it might be a nice way to actually kind of link back in with them and just be chatting them, because it is difficult to meet lads after you finish up playing. Hence the reason I tipped over for a session on the night. But then coaching wise, I'm with the 15s. I was with the 16s last year. The age group has changed, so I'm with the 15s this year in the club. And I do a little bit with the primary school on the way home from school on a Friday. And after that, I don't know. I will somewhere down the line give something back to the football, but I just need to step away from it for now. Yeah. Just sure that if Davey sees me over there, he won't try get me boots again. And yeah, that's probably, I don't know down the line, coaching underage, definitely, definitely giving something back to the football. Playing wise with the club, yeah, and the fact that I've given it up now, retired now, I do believe that for every few months I would have played football, I would have lost a little more time out of the hip and out of my body, and I think now I can give, I hope, injury pending, I would like to give 3-4 years of the club there, and really, because we have a nice young team there at the moment, and a little bit like the football back good few years ago, they're building on like kind of minor and 21 success, and we have a good backbone there now, so it is enjoyable, and I can't wait to get down whatever it is next week or the week after down to see the lads again, because you wouldn't see too much of them outside of the hurling field.
Very good. So before we finish up, I have a series of quick fire questions. One word answers will do. So as we said, there's quite a few medals you have in your possession. What's your most precious medal?
Intermediate county final
in 2010.
2010, no doubt about it.
What was your favourite game to play in?
Favourite game to play in? Probably the county final, so.
County final, okay. Favourite stadium to play in?
Thurles.
Your biggest regret?
Not playing an All-Ireland final.
Best player you have played with or against?
With, I'm going to go with Peter Acheson. It's a tight one between him and Kieran McDonald. Sweeney's putting in a late bust, but I'm going to go with Peter Acheson. He finished up far too soon.
Very good.
Hardest player to play against? Well, if it was Kieran McDonald club-wise, so I could put the two of them in there. I keep it in within tip.
Very good. Do players read Premier View?
Don't know. I'd definitely say Brian Fox does. I'd say Brian Fox. He's in there. I'd say it's incognito. I'd say some of the older players would have been tuning in. I don't know that they ever contribute.
Yeah.
But Brian Fox definitely, I know, because he pretends he doesn't, because he goes in, I'd say, to look at his own name and stuff.
Yeah, probably posting his own name. I'd like it.
Yeah. I'd say he'd be one of those guys in, like, saying, Jesus, Brian Fox is flying.
The Dome in WIT or the Stables in UL?
The Dome.
Have you been kicked off the football WhatsApp yet?
I left on whatever it was on Wednesday before training. I just wished them the best of luck, and I left all groups. There was a good few groups to leave. I left all the nutritionist group and the S&C group, and that was some of the groups I was happy enough to leave, but not the players.
Senior football winners in tip for 2021.
Club. Asher, hard to see pass. I'd actually like to see my Rovers get one over in commercials, but I'd say commercials again, yeah.
Dan Breen winners?
Dan Breen, I'm going to have Rob. I'd like to see a lot more women after being absolutely robbed last year. I felt poor lot more.
Yeah. Intermediate football?
Aberskin.
Feel free to name Cap White as this one, Intermediate Hurling.
Aberskin are going to do the double this year in Ireland. You heard it first here.
All Ireland Hurling.
Can't see past Limerick.
The football.
I'm going to be born here. Maybe Dublin, but I just can't see Dublin getting caught.
Can Tip retain the Munster football title?
Can they? I think they can, yeah. I think they have a good, as I said, I was walking down to the pitch on Monday, the 40, 45 training down there. They had to cut that down to whatever, 32, 34, 36. There's quality footballers in there. There's no reason why they can't be Kerry. They just have to have that mentality that they're, they, they, um, they all can, you know, if they all go in with the same mentality that they are going to beat them, there's no reason why they don't. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a 50-50 game. And if the preparation is done, there's no reason why they can't. The talent is there. And all they need then after that is the drive. And again, a bit of the luck on the day as well.
Yeah, and I swear he didn't ask me to ask you this. Has Brian Fox a better work rate than Brian Duher?
I've seen Brian Duher. No, he does not. Brian Duher. definitely not. No, Brian Duher, definitely better work rate. Foxy comes back, he sits in his sweeper, cleans up the ball and hand passes and then just sits then again for the next two. He's very effective at it, I must say. He's very effective, but work rate. No, I would say he's excellent work rate. To be honest, he's a top guy. I mean, he was looking at maybe potentially not retaining his position. Like, he was struggling there earlier on in 2021, and they were kind of seeing him as a kind of an impact role. And he more or less just kind of gave them the two fingers up and said, no way, I'm not being an impact player. And he just, they had to start him. He was playing so well. He never seems to lose the ball. I mean, he's so good on the ball. That rambling point he scored against Limerick was the maddest point I've ever seen. He rambled all the way down the field and they all just disappeared and moved away from him, tapped it over the bar. It was class.
Yeah, I know. He's an absolute top player. Philip Austin, it was a pleasure to have you on the Premier View. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks very much, Michael.
No bother. Thank you.
Thanks very much for having me.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.